the dwindling output of oil from the Trans-Alaska Pipeline has some candidates worried. How can we stimulate more oil and gas activity to fill up that pipeline? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Republican Lieutenant Governor candidate Jay Ramirez is going to tell us how he aims to ignite Alaska's economy and talk to you at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, email talk@APRN.org. Our guest on Talk of Alaska today is Jay Ramirez, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. If you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Well, so far on Talk of Alaska, we've done these special programs where we spread it out so we could accommodate all the candidates. And we've had Meade Treadwell running for lieutenant governor. And we had Eddie Burke. And now is the time for Jay Ramirez, except that he's not in the door yet. Sometimes, being from Fairbanks, sometimes the studio can be a little hard to find if you're from out of town. It's kind of tucked away in an out-of-the-way corner in between the University of Alaska Anchorage and Alaska Pacific University. But anyway, we're ready to take your phone calls on election issues at 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. If you're calling from Anchorage, that's a local call at 550-8422. You got a favorite candidate you want to push for lieutenant governor, or talk about what is the job of the lieutenant governor, or talk about filling up the pipeline. Our lines are open, and we're awaiting the arrival of Representative Jay Ramirez, who's running for lieutenant governor as a Republican. It's among the more interesting of the races. As we heard from Meade Treadwell, he really hasn't run for public office before, and he is taking a sort of a Hickel kind of line of the owner state. And he says while he might favor the in-state gas line, that he realizes that whoever is elected to governor really calls the shot. And he's just the guy that, and he's capable of backing whatever position the person elected governor takes on the issue of a natural gas pipeline. But he believes that Alaska needs to stand up as the owner state and have more control of its destiny and take a more aggressive approach. Eddie Burke is kind of along the lines of the Tea Party candidate. At one point, one of the Tea Party organizations backed Meade Treadwell and then backed out of that because Burke has been very, very much involved through his radio talk show in drumming up enthusiasm for this idea that there is a lot of big government out there and it needs to be trimmed back. And there is a tax and spend mentality, and we need to get back to common sense. He was an interesting guest on Talk of Alaska. It was the day that we were awaiting word about the plane crash out there in western Alaska that that killed Senator Ted Stevens. So it was a kind of a difficult psychological situation. But Eddie Burke stepped to the plate. He was more than happy to allow reporters to keep running in and out of here and giving us updates about what we knew about the plane crash. And in between, he was explaining his position on things. He came out pretty strong for preventive rural justice. He had calls challenging him on the cost of village public safety officers, and he really held the line. He said, I believe in this. You know, my dad was in law enforcement, and I can see that the earlier that you intervene in domestic problems, the better more cost-effective it is. So he was very supportive of village public safety officers and economic development in rural Alaska. So that is the basis that we have so far. With Mead Treadwell, we discussed a lot of his background, where he has been intimately involved in Arctic policy. And while a lieutenant governor doesn't exactly steer state policy in those directions, he does still maintain all those concerns about the lack of attention to the Arctic territories of the United States. Essentially, the U.S. has not ratified the Law of the Sea Treaty, and that is up to the Senate, and it's difficult to get something like that through the Senate. Every other nation has, including all the Arctic nations, and that treaty is the means by which the territorial jurisdiction over the Arctic is asserted. So, you know, being a part of having his policy positions and Arctic policy, Treadwell is very much an expert along those lines. He's always believed that we need to move forward quickly and aggressively with testing for oil spill response in the Arctic Ocean conditions, and that the United States needs to invest in its Arctic capabilities. Right now, we've got two disabled icebreakers and an icebreaking research vessel, the Healy, and that's it. And both of these icebreakers, the Polar-class icebreakers, are not in operation right now, and it's not clear whether the government would find the money to get back in the icebreaker business. But meanwhile, the Arctic sea ice is withdrawing, and so we'll... well, this is definitely an issue looming in Alaska's future. So now we have Jay Rammers, who is, I'm informed, on his way to the studio. Any just arriving kind of late, and you know, he has a background in his Pike Landing restaurant business. I'm sure he'll be talking about that. He believes that Alaska needs a business-friendly climate. He's extremely distressed at the diminishing throughput of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and he wants something done about that. He can probably tell us just what sort of things he thinks the state needs to do in terms of its policies on its resources, on its fossil fuel resources, and also on a natural gas pipeline. So we're expecting Jay Rammers of Fairbanks any minute here, and we're ready to welcome your calls. And sure enough, there's old Tom in Anchorage ready to step to the plate. Hey, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tom, helping me to not be the only one talk until Jay gets here.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, this issue is with regards to Mr. Representative Rammers' policy towards the Bullet Line, and you know where he's been representing Fairbanks, and their interests. I can fully see why he wants to have a Bullet Line that, in large part, garners its base for payment or for the tariff from South Central Alaska. But as Lieutenant Governor, he would be responsible for representing all of the citizens. And my concern is that the recent reports on the cost of that pipeline show that even the most cost-effective, largest pipeline would cost, the tariff alone would cost more than gas cost in Cook Inlet at the present time. And so my question is, that I would hope you would discuss with Representative Rammers, is whether he will continue to represent the Fairbanksian interests in getting cheaper gas, which, you know, would in any event be cheaper than the diesel they're paying for, or whether he's going to represent the majority of the state's citizens, and seeing that Cook Inlet gas is further developed rather than the Bullet Line, given the much cheaper cost of local exploration, production, and shipping above and beyond what would clearly be a very, very high tariff Bullet Line.
So you're saying that Fairbanks is maybe more advantaged by a Bullet Line than the Rail Belt, where the cost of the fuel itself would... Okay, well, he's walking into the room right now. Hello, Jay. Have a seat right over here. Okay, Tom, we'll do that one.
The tariff of the line versus the the total cost of the tariff and the fuel.
Okay, good. We'll do.
Okay, I'll hang in there if he wants to converse about it.
All right, Tom. We'll put his earphones on, and I'll rephrase the question, and we'll be all set. It is Talk of Alaska. Our guest is Representative Jay Ramos. He's running for lieutenant governor. As a Republican, our telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. And you got his mic open there, Dave? Okay, Jay Ramos, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning.
Hey, you got lost.
Yeah. There's a lot of road construction out there.
Let's try to turn it up over here. Can you hear?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you can turn that up or down as you need. Yeah, you can say that again. I'm sure it's also a very busy time, but I appreciate you being able to make the opportunity to come in and talk to people all over the state of Alaska.
Yes, it's too bad our most beautiful days fall in August when there's the beginning of the sense of fall in the air, even if it hasn't come yet.
Yeah. Well, we have Tom on the line right now, and he has already got a question for you. Essentially, he's talking about the Bullet Line. He said, as Lieutenant Governor, which is a statewide office, maybe you need to re-examine your position on the Bullet Line.
Well, Tom, when elected for Lieutenant Governor, the first thing you do are the duties defined by the Alaska State Constitution, and the next thing are the duties assigned by the governor, and we'll have a good sense of at least the two choices for governor sometime tomorrow evening. And then a lieutenant governor, on one hand, is dutiful. I guess you need extra hands. On one hand, is dutiful to the people. On another hand, is dutiful to the state's chief executive. And then is also dutiful to your own value system and beliefs that you bring to the job. And Bullet Line is a piece of legislation that's working its way through, and we're all very hopeful that it's going to produce economic signals that tell us to move forward as we proceed with our two large diameter projects, both of which seem reasonably circumspect right now.
Yeah. So Tom's point was that Fairbanks, it makes more sense in Fairbanks really than it might for places that are closer to Cook Inlet and get the Cook Inlet gas in.
Well, Fairbanks is a very small market. In fact, all Alaskans on the Rail Belt, and even those Alaskans we could reach in western Alaska or areas that are heavily mineralized, there simply are not enough of us. There is no manufacturing in Alaska. There's not enough Alaskans for heat, space heat, and for power generation to justify a small diameter gas pipeline. The economics simply won't work, and they require large volumes. So we are going to need some kind of an industrial customer, a large customer, an expansion of the export out of the Conoco Marathon project down in Nikiski. There are not enough of us. We don't make enough widgets in Alaska to drive industrial demand. And Fairbanks is about 10% of a small diameter gas pipeline minimum capacity, if we regard that minimum capacity at about a half a billion cubic feet per day. And frankly, Anchorage and Fairbanks put together only represent a third to half of that demand. We must have an industrial load, or it doesn't make economic sense.
Okay. Tom?
Yeah, the point, though, is where it was quite appropriate to represent your Fairbanks representative in trying to put the burden of the tariff, the majority of the tariff burden, on South Central residents. It, as a statewide office, it would clearly be better given the reports on the cost of the bullet line and the exorbitant tariffs, even in the largest line, which you just clearly stated is well beyond the capacity of any foreseeable industrial need. Whether it's appropriate to now shift to represent the majority of Alaskan citizens in trying to get gas developed locally in the Cook Inlet, that would be much, much, much cheaper than that would come out of a bullet line given the exorbitant tariffs.
All right, Tom, thanks.
Tom, you're exactly right. And I was in the Kenai yesterday. The difficulty is that the people in the Kenai are worried about whether the Cook Inlet is depleted. Now, my friend Senator Wagner, that I had breakfast with at Louis down in Kenai a couple of days ago, we went out to the Nanulchik Fair together. He has participated in a piece of legislation passed that he has coined the Stampede. The idea is to get a jack-up rig down into the Cook Inlet and to encourage exploration down there. The difficulty is that as a mature gas field like the Cook Inlet becomes depleted, it becomes more and more expensive to source gas. And of course, this is the exact and precise tension that exists between the RCA and buyers of gas, entities like NSTAR, for instance, is that if it costs a new explorer $7 to $10 to lift the gas, and the RCA is only going to allow a gas sale at $4, you're going to clearly disincentivize anybody from exploring. And if we cannot replace the reserves as we use them in Cook Inlet, and I'm all for incentivizing Cook Inlet, we've got another 7, 10, maybe 15 years. But what are we going to do when that gas runs out? And if we do not get signals from the global marketplace that Alaska's gas is ready to move in a large diameter gas pipeline, then we've got to figure out a way to get gas for Alaskans first. And that's all Alaskans, not only those in Fairbanks and along the road system, but South Central, you know, has been practicing brownouts under Mayor Sullivan. We're very concerned about contraction in the economy in the Kenai Peninsula. This is an issue for all Alaskans, but it must pass the economics test. If it fails, then and it's not economic or it's prohibitively expensive, then it's no good.
Tom, I want to thank you for your call. Our guest is Jay Ramirez, running for Lieutenant Governor. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org. Jay, I think I want to back up a little bit and get some background on you personally. How did you ever get into politics? It seemed like you had a very successful business down there on the river.
Yes, sir. Well, as we're beginning to see, there are a lot of born and raised Alaskans that are running for elected office, both at the federal level and at the state level, and of course at the local level. I'm born and raised in the interior, raised through the public education system, went off to college in Oregon, and then finished a degree in American history from Syracuse, which was near Buffalo. I took Buffalo chicken wings back to Fairbanks, started a 12-seat chicken wing restaurant, Jaybird's Wing World. Bought some restaurants out of bankruptcy several years later, the Food Factory restaurants. Bought Pike's Landing in 1999 and built the hotel the year after. I've since let go of some of those restaurant interests as I began pursuing public service. I still employ about 250 people. I've been making a payroll every 2 weeks for January will be 25 years. I've served in the Alaska State Legislature for 3 terms in District 10. I represent Fort Wainwright back in Fairbanks. We've seen 2 deployments of our brave men and women into harm's way and have welcomed them home. I am excited about the opportunity to run for Lieutenant Governor. The job description sometimes is maligned for suffering from a lack of remarkable components to it, but I think the opportunity to inject original thought into it, to have a bully pulpit from which to speak on behalf of Alaskans. Certainly in my 6 years in the legislature, I've seen laws that are made from the top down, And sadly, they almost always miss their mark and add a layer to the bureaucracy. And I have seen laws that come and percolate from the bottom up that are nurtured by community councils or PTAs or small constituencies or nonprofits that are taken to legislators or those groups visit the legislature. And it becomes an idea and then a bill and is then vetted through the committee process, is voted for on the floor of the House and Senate, and then so often signed by the governor. And those are the laws that I think affect the most amount of positive change in our society. And I'm anxious in participating in that dialogue. And I think that a lieutenant governor can be very viable and a very compelling presence when they choose to engage in that kind of a process.
You know, as a you've been in the legislature to watch the how they dealt with grassroots legislation about cruise ships.
Yes, sir.
You know, the head tax, which was a pretty wordy for an initiative.
It was too vague. It obstructed commerce in the state of Alaska, which is a different issue than just whether you were for or against a head tax.
Oh, yes. But my point is, I want to get back to this business of the due process part of being the lieutenant governor and really the gatekeeper for the electoral process. How would you approach that? What we're seeing right now is that the administration and Campbell and Parnell before him were essentially willing to let constitutionality be decided later.
Yes. Well, elections are like hiring somebody. In this case, tomorrow the weather is going to be good in South Central. I'm not sure how it is around the rest of the state. I think we should anticipate on my side, on the Republican side of the primary, that we're going to have about 80,000 to 90,000 people are going to turn out and vote in the primary tomorrow. And in that way, candidates have been participating in an interview process, and it has grown more intense here in the final 14 or 28 days before the election. And so I would submit to folks that when you're looking for on a person's resume under that line, do you have previous experience? I would submit to you that I am the only person running who was a prime sponsor of an initiative that took it all the way through the process, and I'm referring to the 90-day session ballot initiative. I was a prime sponsor with my good friend Senator Tom Wagner, a Republican from Kenai, and my good friend Senator Gretchen Guess, who was served with distinction in the Senate as a Democrat. We put together the language, we collected 100 signatures, we submitted it to then-Governor Lehman. We got back our booklets. I spearheaded the organization. We collected 48,000 signatures. We passed the ballot initiative. It was enacted not that year because that would have created some chaos, but we structured it so that it would be enacted in the following year and give the legislature 12 months or a one session to prepare for the change. And it has worked, I think, very well over those 3 years and has given us the methodology to better value our time and to be more thoughtful in choosing the legislation that we pass. And so I think that experience in ballot initiatives, which become, I like direct democracy. I like trusting the voters to make decisions, but you do want a lieutenant governor that can be the shepherd, the custodian of that ballot initiative and make sure that it passes the simplicity test, if it will. The cruise ship head tax, which I voted against, but one of the reasons I voted against it is it seemed to have multiple initiatives embedded in it. And I think we have a single subject rule, but I think a lieutenant governor can determine whether they want to broadly or narrowly define the single subject rule. So I know something about ballot initiatives, which is a critical part of the job before a lieutenant governor.
Well, absolutely. And of course, the attorney general is the other piece of that.
Yes.
And
the Constitution as well.
Absolutely. Are you ready for some phone calls here?
Oh, yes. Jay Ramers? Absolutely.
All right. Well, first caller is from Anchorage. It's Sean. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Jay Ramers, Sean.
Thanks, Steve. I have to say that, here's a job, lieutenant governor, where they do one of the most important things. They are responsible for the ballot language, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, no, the initiative is written by the sponsors, but there's a negotiation process, and then the way it's described on the ballot falls to the lieutenant governor.
Correct.
Exactly, and that's a huge responsibility. And here's a guy, Jay Ramres, who always sides for the corporation over the people. And the first instance, there's a couple that come to mind that really bother me, and I think it's dangerous to have a guy like this potentially in charge of doing something like that. Price gouging. Jay Ramres has to be the only guy in South Central Alaska right now, even though he lives in Fairbanks, that doesn't think we have a gouging problem here. In Alaska, prior to the high oil prices in 2008, having traveled extensively through the lower 48 and back and forth, gas prices were virtually the same. And then they went up to $150 a barrel. That was reflected in $4 a gallon gas. And our prices, while the rest of the country's prices went down, our prices remained high. Jay Ramres is the guy that decided in his little report that there isn't any of that going on. It's ridiculous. And I think it's dangerous to have a guy like that in power here, and I'd like his comments on it. But the second thing is on the Citizens United legislation. Here's a guy that was sitting there on television on gavel to gavel in the wee hours arguing that he didn't want disclosure on these ads, who's the top three contributors, both audio-wise and visually, on the television screen so we can find out who the largest donators are.
Okay, and, well, that's two questions.
Anyway.
Okay, that's two questions. So let's give Jay a chance here to answer them.
Good questions. The issue with price gouging is very interesting. It depends on what your definition of price gouging is. Now, if we have a natural disaster and a generator at Home Depot or Spenard's or AIH is $400, and the next day they jack the price up to $1,200, that's the legal definition of price gouging. When refineries take advantage, and in this way I agree with you, when they take advantage of a trapped marketplace where you have matched supply and matched demand, because we don't have 10 refineries that are trying to dump gasoline below cost, we don't have a highway system where there are means for less expensive gasoline to come into the marketplace, then the refineries did take advantage of Alaskans. I agree. I thought it was morally reprehensible behavior, but I don't think that it rose to the level of being illegal behavior. You know, look at Alaska Airlines. It costs $400 to go to Fairbanks to Anchorage. It costs $150 to go from Seattle to Portland. There are 10 or 15 or 20 commuter airlines competing in the Seattle-Portland price, so the free market drives the price down to $150. It is just as unconscionable, that price, but it's a trapped market with only a few carriers. And so if we could see inside the books of Alaska Airlines, there's no doubt in my mind, and I'm an MVP flyer and a big champion of that airline. I love Alaska Airlines, but there's no doubt that they do a lot better per seat on the Fairbanks Anchorage flights, let alone those out to the remoter parts of Alaska, than they do in similar mileage flights down in lower 48, where it's a lot less expensive you don't have to de-ice an airplane going from Sacramento, to San Francisco. So, you have to draw a distinction, I think, between poor corporate behavior and something that's illegal. And price gouging is actually a legal standard. Do I think that they were sticking it to us? You bet. Is there anything that we can do about it? That's how we tried to approach it. Is there a way for us to encourage another refinery? We're a trapped marketplace. There's not. Is there a way for us to bring fuel into the Port of Anchorage? I worked very hard on that with Ada last year and had legislation that fell a couple days short of moving through the Senate because I got it through the House, but Ada continues to work on a project like that. We have to have a solution to cheaper gas. The cost of rack gasoline is a dollar cheaper in Seattle than it is in Cherry Point than it is in Alaska. That problem needs to be solved, but I don't think that it can be solved by legislation that points to price gouging. I think consumers would pay a price for it. With regard to disclosure portion, I don't mind the disclosure with large super entities, but I live in a smaller community than Anchorage, and there are many smaller communities than Fairbanks that advertise, and the cost of disclosure for a small entity in a TV commercial can be very expensive, and I think you have to guard on behalf of the voice of the little guy and not just the giant entities, whether that's the Alliance or whether that's NEA, whether that's the State Employees Association, or whether that's the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. The big guys can afford to allocate 9 seconds away in a 30-second spot to disclosure. The little guys sometimes can't, and I think we have to protect the process for the mom and pops.
So So it's a matter of the time then, rather than the production expense of, hey, Joe, you're going to have to go down to the station. This has to be in your voice.
that was my take, was that we needed to be mindful of mom and pops in small communities at the municipal level, not the giant ballot initiatives that we see moving, the macro initiatives that we see moving now. The large entities can afford 20% of the ad time being dedicated to a disclosure. We just couldn't get we had to have a one-size-fits-all, and I always guard against making sure that mom and pops and the smallest of the small have an opportunity to have a voice to compete against the giants who may be adversaries across the table. I think it's critically important.
It's Jay Ramirez. He's running for Lieutenant Governor as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN, covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
It's Talk of Alaska. Our guest is Jay Ramirez. He's running for Lieutenant Governor, and he's state representative from Fairbanks. So, Jay, I think if you're ready, we got a stack of calls now.
Absolutely. Nice to talk to people.
All right. Steve in Eagle River, you're on the air with Jay Ramirez.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Hi.
I'm retired military, and I've been kind of checking out the candidates for office. And I went on your website last night and was checking some things out. On the front page, you have some nice words about veterans.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
The question I had is, you have 6 SEALs, including the Marine Corps, where I'm retired from.
Yes, sir.
And I'm just wondering where you got permission to use those, because as Lieutenant Governor, you have to be, half your job, you said, I think, was to protect the Alaska State Seal. And yet, unless you have approval from the Department of Defense, you are illegally using those seals that my brothers and sisters died to protect. So my question is, do you have permission from the Department of Defense to post those 6 seals on your website? Because if not, it is a gross violation of law, Jay, and it really makes me angry.
Steve,
Do you have the permission?
I would have to check with my the agency that that put up my ad things, but I have nothing but such enormous respect for the military, and I can't answer that question without checking back with you. But if it's inappropriate, we would address it right away. And my apologies to offend you. I honor our active duty military and our veterans, and nobody has brought it to my attention.
Jay, so if you're saying that if you were elected Lieutenant Governor, that this would be your response if someone called and there was something on the website that was wrong or something your office was doing wrong, you would say that I'd have to call, I'd have to check, I'd have to find out elsewhere. Jay, this is your website. It has your name on it. You are the top dog at the campaign. The buck stops here.
And it does.
And this is ridiculous that you do not know this, because, as you said in your words, half the job of the Lieutenant Governor is to protect the seal. And how can you competently tell people to vote for you when you can't even do that now? And this is a horrible issue, Jay. This makes me livid. Because there are people that have died for this issue.
All right, Steve, you're starting to repeat yourself now.
Well, I'm upset and I'm sorry, but I'll take the rest of my answer offline. But I just wanted to let you know, Jay, that get those seals off of there, because the Department of Defense would not give you permission. I can guarantee it. They would not allow a candidate to do that. So If you're doing this illegally, shame on you.
All right, Steve, thank you.
Yes, sir. No malice, and I have a great respect for our military. Senator Huggins is the head of the Veterans Caucus of the Alaska State Legislature. He's not brought this to my attention, and if there's a misstep, it will be corrected. And my apologies for potentially offending your listener. I have the highest respect. As I say, I represent a military base, and they are my constituents, and I am very involved with them and their lives in the interior and across the state. And I've not heard this issue been brought up before, but I will look into it as soon as we're off the air.
Yeah, as a businessman, you certainly are sensitive to copyright issues too, because you get in trouble for them.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to Bob. Joins the program from Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Jay Ramirez, Bob.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've listened to, you've had several good questions and answers here. I grew up in a mom and pop grocery, gasoline, fuel oil store many years ago, and I also respect the military, and I know Senator Huggins is a close associate of yours,
and
says you're a man of your word, and I respect anything that Charlie says, and Jay is a man of his word. But my question, Jay, was we had a Division of Elections office down here in Kenai, and it's been closed. They closed it down here, I think, three years ago. And now if a person has to run for office, they have to fax a mountain of paperwork back and forth to Juneau for your filing stuff. And if you're elected, would you consider reopening the Division of Elections office here in Kenai, at least on election years? So if a person wants to run for office, they aren't strangled by trying to fax 45 pages of stuff back and forth to Juneau.
Yes, I thank you for your kind words, and the answer is yes, we need to look into that. I was in the Kenai over the weekend for Industry Appreciation Days and for the Kenai State Fair in Inilchik. It's a thriving, robust part of Alaska, and we cannot consolidate government in such a way that we deprive people of one of the most basic things, which is who we are going to elect and how they're going to participate in the democratic process. And so there ought to be a way to triage it, at least through filing deadlines and things. And it bears looking into, as long as it does not result in, hiring more people and creating more of a burden on state government. We have to be very mindful of how many people we have working in the state of Alaska. But as we move into an election year, I think your point's quite valid.
Yeah. Well, we have a large population down here.
Absolutely.
It increases in July when the fish are in the river, but, I think that's something that, to look at. But anyway, thank you and good luck to you.
Thank you. God bless.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Calling from Soldotna, now to Bethel. Tim joins the program. Tim, you're on the air with Jay Ramirez.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And I really appreciate the question that was raised earlier about the energy issue. but I live out here in the rural part of Alaska, and the gas line going from the North Slope down the road system to Anchorage and Fairbanks and other communities along the road system, will realize the the effect of lower energy costs immediately, but out here in rural Alaska, getting the gas line or some kind of a gas system, it's going to be years and years and years. And right now, we are paying the highest cost in probably the nation for energy, and it's affecting all fabric of life out here, from the subsistence fishermen to the mom and pop's operations and even the airlines as well. It's just getting extremely cost prohibitive, and I was just wondering how Representative Ramirez would utilize his position as lieutenant governor to influence rural the rural energy policy?
Great question. I'm sure you speak for many, Tim.
Very, very articulate. I thank you. And it's a tremendous concern. I've been a visitor to Bethel, and I understand some of the challenges and strains and the joys that people enjoy out in Bethel. Senator Hoffman represents the Bethel area, I believe. And we are mindful of not only trying to push different efficiencies out there and some renewable energies. In my private sector, you know, I've got a 15 kW solar panel program, and solar is wonderful, wind is wonderful, but it is not a satisfactory solution for the space heat requirements or those communities that are paying nearly a dollar per kilowatt for electricity. If you don't have cheap energy and an available, trained, educated workforce, you cannot build a successful economy. And it's not appropriate for government simply to continue to inject funds in to subsidize communities without giving them a rabbit trail out. We are interested, as we look at the in-state gas pipeline, in allocating a portion of the transportation tariff that would be paid by rail belt users to create a fund to try and generate options, renewable options and otherwise, for our friends in the rural communities, as well as taking some of the natural gas liquids, the NGLs, and figuring out how to move propane and switch people off of diesel, which is the most expensive way to provide space heat in the hydrocarbon world of choices, and move us to propane, to migrate to a different feedstock that would be more affordable. And that's those are some of the best ideas that are percolating. None of us in Alaska anticipated that the price of oil was going to go to $100 a barrel or thereabouts. Those in the Department of Revenue are thrilled because of the services it allows the state of Alaska's treasury to sustain. Those of us that live in a subarctic climate that are still tethered to diesel know what a pain and what an undermining factor it is for the communities that we live in, Bethel and Fairbanks and hundreds of other small Alaskan communities still suffer under the weight of that unequal yoke.
Well, weirdly, it seems to peak right about the time when you have to secure your barge.
That's because of gasoline demand in the lower 48 goes up during the summer driving season, yeah. And it coincides with when we have our barges leave, and it's because oil is driven by global market prices, whereas natural gas is often contracted out for 3, 5, and 10 years at a time. So the commodity functions very much differently than the price of oil, which functions day to day.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, thank you for your response, Representative Bremers. And I'd just like to remind you and also other lawmakers, were not only friends, but were also fellow citizens of Alaska, and I thoroughly
absolutely
believe that we deserve as much attention as people along the in the populated communities as well.
We must be judged by how we. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Tim. Thank you.
We must be judged by how we treat the most vulnerable amongst us, and sometimes those are communities that are tied to inefficient kilowatt transmission systems or tied to diesel for space heat in very, very cold climates.
So, Jay Ramos, if I heard you right, you said if we did get a bullet line or any gas line, we really should put some of the tariff over towards defraying energy costs in the bush?
Well, I think it ought to be determined by who the builder is. If we are successful in attracting a private sector entity to build the gas pipeline, then I think we would have to look to the royalty gas as a revenue stream to help offset the horrendous cost of living in rural Alaska. If the state entertains the notion of subsidizing part of an in-state line, then it actually opens up, I think, an avenue to look to the tariff itself if the state is participating in a gas pipeline. And those are some of the things that are going to be worked out by the in-state gas pipeline team that I've worked with. And I just want to remind your rural listeners that, you know, I led this food airlift along with a lot of other interested urban Alaskans out to the Western Alaska food lift that we did 2 years ago when there were problems in Mnemonic and Kotlik and Russian Mission and 11 villages, and we raised money and food and moved 40,000 pounds of food Privately out to 11 Western villages. And then subsequent to that, we passed a compassionate aid bill that will allow future governors to have the tool if there is a community in Alaska in need that a governor can use state transportation assets to move food or clothing or medicine out to an affected community that it finds itself in an acute crisis.
Do you have any notions as to how we might get the power out to Donlin Creek to actually make that mine start crunching?
Well, Donlin and the International Tower Hill prospect in Livengood are our two greatest hopes as potential industrial customers for a small diameter gas pipeline. A fellow named James Foog is the head engineer assigned by Donlin to look at building a very small diameter pipeline from the Cook Inlet up and out to Donlin, even though the cost of that could be $1 to $2 billion. That's how interested they are in trying to gasify that mining prospect. An in-state gas pipeline going from the North Slope down would find a very hungry market in Livengood for the Tower Hill prospect, and that would be the best way for us to move gas from the North Slope to Donlin as an industrial customer, and then further down the pipe toward Nikiski, where Conoco Marathon, who have only been exporting 25 billion cubic feet annually the last couple of years, but they are licensed to transport up to 100 billion cubic feet per year. And of course, if you have a gas pipeline that's at a half a B a day times 365 days is about 180 billion cubic feet a year necessary to keep that gas pipeline full. And so it really comes down to simple math of adding up the use, the demand in various communities and potential industrial sites. And that would be our hope, is that we could do some just-in-time construction where the International Tower Hill prospect, the Donlin Creek prospect, and the in-state gas pipeline would all marry and merge together, and that we would see a real push for employment opportunities in the mining industry, as well as the development safely, as well as the development of an in-state gas pipeline.
Well, I'd have to say that would be igniting, all right.
That would ignite Alaska's economy for sure.
Gee Rammers is our guest. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
It's Talk of Alaska. Jay Ramirez is our guest. He's running for lieutenant governor as a Republican. And, of course, Election Day is tomorrow. Election Day is tomorrow. So, Jay, how do you feel you're doing?
Oh, I think we're doing great. It's I declared on October 20th, so over 10 months. And there is nothing like sweat equity and shoe leather. And a lot of air miles to get you all across Alaska. I've been through the rail belt. I've been through Southeast. I've been through Western Alaska. I've seen it all. It is remarkable the low common denominators that bind us all together. And this really is the key and a wonderful opportunity for Lieutenant Governor, because like all Alaskans, Lieutenant Governors do get to shake their fists at the feds and ask for change. But a Lieutenant Governor also should be mindful of the narrower horizons, which is to help Alaskans address their needs across our state, to work on trade between our various regions, to build our own economies so that goods and services are chasing one another amongst Alaskans, the ability for us to cultivate new trading partners in the Pacific Rim. Alaska needs to chart out its next 50 years, and we want to get away from being just the end of the supply chain from the East Coast to the West Coast up to Seattle, and then have Alaska on the receiving end of all of our freight. and being able to discuss those things with all Alaskans, and the excitement and the enthusiasm of an election cycle and the opportunities and the challenges that face Alaskan. I'm an optimist by nature. It makes me a poor card player, but I think it makes me a good public servant to always believe that we're moving forward, that we have the opportunity to improve things, that when things go wrong in our state, when we have challenges, as is often the case, that we have the energy and the wisdom and the foresight to overcome those burdens and to move forward and move ahead. You know, our next generation is sitting in high school this morning in much of the state, or K through 8, and we've got to make sure that we are custodians of a great Alaska for these young people. That's our duty. That's our charge. And I get excited about that. 25 years in the private sector, I've made a payroll every 2 weeks, and I like bringing that skill set, that consistency, that knowingness that you better wake up tomorrow with a good plan and good vigor and be a good team leader to the folks that you're working with, or in this case, the folks that you're working for, so that you can go do a great job and help make Alaska the most competitive state that it can be, the best marketplace, the richest economy, the kindest set of communities to its neighbors, safe, happy, moving forward communities, training a future workforce, providing energy, basic building blocks, and then get out of the way and let the private sector work its magic.
Well, I'll have to say this. Anybody that can can recognize an opportunity in chicken wings,
yes, sir,
has got some kind of imagination going for them.
The world is boundless, and Alaska has only begun to scratch at its resourcefulness and its opportunities. We're a resource state, but we're capable of so much more. And I have intellectual curiosity like you and so many of your listeners. And you get to learn a lot and see a lot when you're in public service. And then the question becomes its applicability. Can you find missions and projects and Alaskans with whom you can go apply what you learn and know and translate that enthusiasm and move our state forward and get things done? And it's fun. Public service is hard work. It's serious work. But it's fun trying to chart a course forward that propels our state and its citizens and those of us who love our state and are dedicated to us moving forward and making a better Alaska for the next generation.
Well, I see we've got Mark and Palmer that's been waiting for a half an hour, but I'm going to go to Steve and Wasilla first. Steve, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Jay Ramirez.
Hey, hi, how you doing?
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I have two things I want to say. First, I want to thank you because you're a business owner, you employ a lot of people, and you've paid a lot of tax money to the federal government over the years, probably $1 million, I would imagine, based on your businesses. And I always say, you know, if you value your freedom, then thank a taxpayer, because in my mind, the taxpayers are the real guarantors of our freedom and not necessarily DOD employees with their very generous benefits, which are paid by guys like you. But the next thing I want to say is, you know, I just came back from Yakutat, and what I saw there was basically world-class animal watching. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of tourists on the ferry and various places, and they all come to Alaska to see wildlife, but a lot of them leave disappointed. You know, partly it's because they expect it to be like some nature TV show where there's, you know, you just look out there and there's like animals everywhere. And of course, that's not what wildlife's like. But my problem is that in Alaska here, the old guard still controls fish and game, and it's really all about hunting. And I think looking forward into the 21st century, you know, we're going to have the world's population is going to explode. It's going to be mega cities. And you're already seeing that already from people from India and China coming here for our environmental ecotourism. So what I want to know, would you do something about fish and game policy to actually promote wildlife viewing? So, you know, instead of it just being dominated by, you know, the old guard, like, you know, in the Ken Burns thing where they all pile out of the barn, they shoot off their hunting rifles in protest of federal policy. You know, I think we need to promote, and we need to set aside wildlife viewing areas, because if you don't shoot at animals, they become quite comfortable around people. Like I was out at Kodiak, out at the narrow cape where the launch facility
is. Oh, yeah, I've been there. Great place.
Huge herds of buffalo out there, which aren't hunted heavily. They're very comfortable around people. And I just think that's the kind of fish, and it'll pay far more money in the long run as a tourism thing than it will basically as meat.
All right, Steve, I think we're going to get into dueling visions here. You got so much vision, but I want to thank you for your question and ask Jay Ramos, what about the peaceable kingdom here? Are we getting past the guided hunter, from Germany or wherever paradigm into watchable wildlife and non-consumptive use?
Well, you're talking to the person who has the NRA endorsement, and so I first have to put in a plug for managing for abundance, and we have a lot of people that hunt moose not for sport but to fill their freezer. And I was in a hearing with some of our rural Alaska friends last year, and they talked about a moose was the equivalent of a permanent fund check to them in their freezer. So we have to be mindful of the different kind of viewpoints that people have toward our wildlife. I do want to introduce you to a word I heard at a luncheon some weeks ago, and it was called herbalism, U-R-B-A-L-I-S-M. And it is this notion that although over the last 50 years we have seen people move into large concentrations of populations, large cities, New York and Chicago and Los Angeles and Houston, Atlanta, that we are now beginning to see a migration of people to smaller cities, and that it is going to mean wonderful things for Anchorage and Fairbanks and smaller communities like Ketchikan and Juneau and the Kenai over the next 10 and 20 and 30 and 40 years. And this notion of wildlife viewing is wonderful, whether we want to figure out how to have docile, approachable animals because they recognize people are taking pictures is a different road for me to go down. And I have empathy for your point of view, but I'm not sure that I see it the same way. And so far as being a taxpayer, yes, I'm a taxpayer, but most of us Alaskans, other than our vehicle registrations and business licenses, our taxes go to the municipal level for school boards and property taxes, and we have to be mindful of that burden and the shift of the burden from the state onto municipalities, since the state's largest taxpayers are generally the oil companies. It's 90% of our revenue stream. And so we have to be careful about the burdens that come to municipalities, which is where we feel the pinch of property taxes, and that's why we have to guard against state government growth is because otherwise the burden is going to fall on us as the state contracts to spending only on itself. And so I'm quite mindful as a taxpayer of those considerations. And I love wildlife viewings, but I'm also a great champion for the hunters and fishing game. They step on themselves often, but other times they are doing the best they can to manage for abundance. Science is biology is tough. That's why it is a science.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Mark and Palmer, I'm sorry we're not going to have time for you to get to a question because we only got about 10, 15 seconds left. But thank you very much for your persistence. And several people had the same sort of fishing game kind of questions. I think we got your position fairly well there, Jay Ramos. I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. Everybody vote tomorrow.
Yeah. And I guess as Lieutenant Governor, you the word is bully pulpit, right?
Yes, the word is galvanizing the viewpoints of Alaskans.
All right, thanks a lot. Better late than never. Jay Ramos has been our guest on Talk of Alaska. Coming up tomorrow, well, it's Election Day, but we got a show, and it's going to be about putting food by. Dave Waldron and Josh Edge on our crew today. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. What would you do with an extra $56 a week? Well, that's how much you're spending if you smoke one pack of cigarettes a day. At $8 a pack, that's $240 a month, $3,000 a year. Think about it, and think about quitting. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. It's free, and it works. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.